So welcome everybody. We are here at the Strengths-Based Nursing Conference. Thank you for joining us. We'll be looking at scenario number 2, which you've all received in your package, and we'll be looking at it through the education perspective. My name is Leah Sanzone. I'm faculty lecturer at the Ingram School of Nursing, and along with my co-facilitators, we will be with you for the next hour to look at the scenario. So I'll have my colleagues introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Sandy. I'm also a faculty lecturer here at the Ingram School of Nursing.
Hello, Marcia Beaulieu. I'm at the School of Nursing, assistant professor, and welcome.
Hi, my name is Catherine Groh. I'm an assistant professor at the Ingram School of Nursing and a nurse clinician in mental health at the Douglas University Mental Health Institute.
And I'm Patricia Binner, visiting from University of California, San Francisco.
We will begin, and just before I read the scenario, so that we all know that we're dealing with the same scenario, I would just like to add that the piece of data that we felt was missing was knowing whether or not this was a firstborn, and we have decided that we're going to look at the scenario as being a firstborn.
Okay.
So, scenario number 2. The other aspect is that we're going to be looking at the education focus, and of course, in one of the questions, it says that create a healthy learning environment for the student or staff member, but we will be looking at it through 1, the family, and 2, the team.
Okay.
So I will go ahead and read the scenario. You are beginning your shift in the caseroom of a community hospital. You arrive, and your charge nurse informs you that they are 1 nurse short, and that we are a full house with 13 patients in various stages of labor. You are assigned 3 patients. One of your patients is Mrs. Asif, a recent immigrant from Afghanistan, who will soon be fully dilated and will be ready to start pushing. Mrs. Asif and her husband must rely on 2 of Mrs. Asif's female cousins to serve as interpreters. Mrs. Asif has expressed desire for pain relief, epidural, but Mr. Asif has expressly asked that his wife receive no form of pain medication. The patient's cousins are very supportive of her, and they are getting more and more distressed by Mrs. Asif's increasing discomfort. You also observe that Mr. Asif remains very distant and withdrawn. He sits at the far end of the room, does not interact or have contact with his wife. He is becoming more aggressive and hostile towards his wife's cousins as well as towards
you.
Well as towards you, as evidenced by an increase in the tone of his voice. Whenever you attempt to evaluate the progress of Mrs. Asif's labor, he tries to stop you. The situation is making you very anxious and causing great stress and tension. Adding to stress is the reactions of your colleagues. Each time you leave the room, you are accosted by them. They comment on the presence of the family in the room. They are concerned that the room is too small to accommodate so many family members. In fact, they believe there should be no visitors allowed in the delivery room, and you are creating an unfortunate precedent. They inform you that they will share their concerns with the head nurse. So the guiding questions for the small group discussion. I will list them in a little while, but ideally we'll be using this morning's presentations as a guide, and we and ourselves will have a discussion following each question, and I welcome any participants to write down or send in their questions, and we will receive them and answer them as we receive them. First question. After reading this scenario, what are you feeling?
So should it start with us?
Yeah, sure.
Well, I'm feeling quite tense because I can sense a tension in the room between the husband and the cousins and the wife. I'm feeling concern about the wife because of her pain issues and lack of pain management at this point. I'm feeling time pressures. She may be close to starting to push or, you know, starting the delivery process. And the fact that is that we have to work through interpreters. So it's very complex. It's a little bit overwhelming right now.
Okay.
I think I agree with all of those. And in fact, in the scenario, it says that we're feeling very anxious and it's causing great stress and tension. I think that's obvious from the acute nature of the situation and also all the variables that are at play here with the conflict between the family and then this event that is happening. And it's a time we can't just take our time and slow things down. This labor is happening. So certainly I feel all of those feelings. I also feel quite compelled myself to help this family, to make this birth a positive experience. And I feel like I have all that load on my shoulders. I have that goal that I want to reach, and it is a little bit overwhelming, but I'm feeling quite compelled and quite responsible to... And it may be a little bit focused on this outcome of how can I, what can I do, and I need to do something to make this a positive experience. And I think the other thing I'm feeling is frustrated at the system. And I've come onto my shift and I'm thrown into this situation, and how did it, why did it evolve to such a point? Why couldn't someone have intervened a little bit earlier so that I'm not walking in here in the midst of this crisis, actually?
Right, and we don't really know what is happening with your other two patients.
That's the other thing, yes, yeah. That's right. Yeah. So this,
Now, but the sense that really stops me and really concerns me is whenever you attempt to evaluate the progress of Mrs. Asif's labor, he tries to stop you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure with what force or with what understanding or if it's possible to explain to him through the interpreters why it's important to check her in terms of the dangers of not knowing where her progress is.
Mm-hmm.
Or whether there's any fetal distress or any problems with prolapse cord or any other bleeding or anything that might be going on.
You know, in fact, for me, when I look at this situation, I'm feeling quite overwhelmed, as you've all stated. And my overwhelming feelings come from, you know, the wife, Mrs., is in labor. And how urgent is it?
Mm-hmm.
While I'm looking at her environment and how thinking of how that's influencing her whole labor process. And clearly, you know, does Mr. Asif, as was brought up by Dr. Benner, understand what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how are the interpreters, how can we work via the interpreters to make this incident positive for everybody, really?
Mm-hmm. To me, it's interesting because my overwhelm, my distress related to this, the barrier, I think there are cultural barriers that actually I feel more that it's me not understanding what is this family, what are their experience, because I know what I want as of my culture and who I am, but once again, and I think this is, and from my end, this is what we need to kind of to shift away from our shoulder, is it's about them. Now the question is, what are their expectations?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the wife clearly one, probably, I mean, is that the type of experience she wants to have? And what are his goal, or what is his expectation from his perspective? What is his understanding of what we're trying to do, more than starting to explain to him why we need to do this? I think I need more information from...
Could you ask him, if you were still in Afghanistan, how would this birth go?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yes. I think
what
the other...
What does it mean?
And we don't have... And it says, whenever you attempt to evaluate the progress of her labor, what is that? Does that mean an internal exam? And I think we have to start thinking out of the box in terms of what that means to them. And is that really necessary? Because we have these sacred cows. You know, we have to know exactly how that labor is progressing every moment. And... In fact, this is a natural process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do we, you know, is it a matter of convincing him of this is what we need to do and why.
Yeah.
Or I think what you're getting at is where are they coming from, and what do I need to let go of in my practice, in our sacred cows, or in our routines, or our procedures, or our policies, to then have a better fit.
Got it, with this on our shoulder.
Yes, that's a huge piece of our dilemma at this
We've
point.
We've moved on from question one about your feelings, and I think we've got into other questions. What's going on here? So let's continue our discussion on what's going on here.
Well, I think some of the cultural issues that have been brought up and what does this mean to them are really, really important.
Yes.
Because if you think about where they're coming from, Afghanistan, it's been at war for many, many years now, maybe going on 12 years with, you know, the allied forces going in there and so on. And what is an invasive vaginal exam mean in that context, you know? I mean, and to
That's people
who most likely are from the Islamic faith as well, I mean, from a religious point of view, you know, even if it's women examining this woman, what does it mean in that context? So I think that's one issue. I think the other thing brought up about, you know, what is birth like in their country? And the giving of the pain medication, it's probably moot at this point because of how far she's along in her labor. But in countries where you don't trust governments, you don't trust the systems that are in place, and you're putting something into this woman with God knows what it's going to do and how it's going to affect her and the baby and so on, I think all of those are issues that we have to think about.
Absolutely. And I think one of the biggest thing of what's going on here, I can't come up with that information without addressing it via the interpreters, asking him.
I'm
observing that you're quite stressed or quite concerned. I'm concerned about your anxiety or your stress. Can you explain to us maybe what is going on? He seems to have a big influence on this entire situation. So I think it's important for us to figure out what is going on in the situation, to be able to explore with him what is really causing all this stress. Is it maybe the first hospitalized birth he's ever been involved in, or is it the first birth he's ever been involved with? Have there been losses of babies in the past? I'm not quite sure, but we need to explore that with Mister, and of course making him feel that he's important to us.
Conveying
that message to him, of course, via the interpreters, but making him realize that, you know, it's important for us to know what's going on, and that he can help us help his wife and have a positive experience for both of them, because he's the dad too in this situation.
I think the other thing, when I thought, what is going on here, and I think it touches on everything, but I had to bring it really back down to basics. And ultimately what is going on here is this is a family who is experiencing a critical developmental life transition. It is going to affect them for the rest of their lives. So this is not just a small, and even those small things are meaningful. So that is the bottom line. And that's why all those other things are important. Because this, and that is universal. And it doesn't matter what culture you come from. This family is experiencing a major developmental transition in their lives that has the potential to be traumatizing or to be health enhancing and health promoting. And that sets then the stage for including him and not ignoring him, and those sorts of, and we're getting on to the next question, is the interventions and then how we're going to manage it. But I think seeing it from that light would be helpful to me, because it really, and it unifies things. This is a universal experience, so the culture is important, but this is why.
And I think it speaks to the uniqueness of the person, their experiences that they're bringing, their culture that, you know, surrounds them and so on. And that family. So it's the uniqueness of that family, really.
The other data that we don't have here that Mr. A has expressed that she not received pain medication, and I don't know what her response is to him with that. Is that mm-hmm. something that she's nodding and she's now in agreement with him, or is there actually conflict there? And again, we have to let go of those cultural yes. biases yes. that if she, her role is to listen to her husband, and that's what's important to her, and to follow his suggestions or desires, then that's a little bit of a different story also.
But see, that I think we need to be careful. That's it. And it's, I think we need to be very aware of our assumptions.
Yes.
Because our first assumption when we see this, we're saying, oh, she wants the pain medication and he doesn't. So, and I think it's like us, why we are hiring a doula, to make sure that when we're asking for the pain, that we are being coached not to do it. I mean, that's specifically, that was my instruction, uh-huh. interestingly. But yet someone would have not seen this as a barrier. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to ask, I think we need to provide respect for him because he's speaking for her. So I think assuming that she actually, he doesn't have her best wellness at heart.
Yes.
I think it's, again, it's a pure assumption. Because she's delivering, she's in the zone. So I think, maybe she gave her instruction. I don't know.
Coming from a strengths-based perspective, I would, default to he's doing this out of a caring,
that's right.
Relationship. He's yeah. doing this for the what he believes,
yes.
it's all perspective, is for the good of the baby. So he's not a bad father. He's not an uncaring spouse. And that's where I would come from in this. Mm-hmm. But again, what is her response to him? Is there really conflict in there? Or she says no, he says yes, and that's fine. We're going to go with the yes or the no. So I don't know if there's actually conflict in the couple as well.
Yeah.
We do have to be careful of the
absolutely.
Cultural assumptions.
Yes.
That they
yes. And I think we shouldn't forget that the interpreters are her cousins mm-hmm. that want her to also be receiving the medication. So we are using the interpreters to get to him
mm-hmm.
and try to figure out what is the meaning of all this. And so we also have to be not just going with the information we receive,
mm-hmm.
but be quite attentive to himself, to him, and his bodily expressions and what is really going on. So we have to, even if we don't speak the same language, we have to really rely on a nonverbal communication and body language that he's transmitting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we have to really take care on both sides. I think
mm-hmm.
we have to hear from the wife.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can't dismiss her
absolutely. Absolutely.
Preferences.
That's right. But I'm asking, what is her response to the husband? Because my role as going in and supporting him or some.
Mm-hmm.
I see my role as what is her response to him, and then working with that dyad.
Mm-hmm.
How do they
mm-hmm.
solve problems together?
Mm-hmm.
How do they
mm-hmm.
make decisions mm-hmm. together?
And
I agree.
I just feel like that right now we're having a limitation. We're limited by him.
Mm-hmm.
If we are trying to continue to go towards her, we're hitting a wall.
That's
this
right.
is where I'm feeling.
That's right.
So I think we need to work with him in order to be able to work with her.
In the midst of all this, we shouldn't be forgetting that here is a lady, a woman in active labor, ready
very
to push.
Active, right.
And
we need
as we're being quite attentive and putting all of the strength-based value, we also need to be quite vigilant about her progress and how she is doing with
and
all
the
this.
Fetus.
And of course,
and
the fetus.
Yeah, I want some
yeah.
fetal heart tone
yes.
and
yes.
some
yes.
blood pressure
exactly.
here.
Exactly.
That's right.
So it's
yeah.
a fine line that we're walking here,
yeah.
But very real that all
yeah.
nurses.
And I mm-hmm. do think the fetal heart tones, and maybe we could even use an amplifier so the father can hear,
mm-hmm.
So that we're transparent. And the mother's blood pressure, both of those things are really important.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not so intrusive
no,
as
no,
a vaginal
no, no. Yes, that's right.
exam.
Yeah. That's right, that's right.
And I think part of it is we also need to figure out with the dad, like, it's very normal for us to have these fetal heart tones and
mm-hmm.
the sounds, but for him it might be
mm-hmm.
new, for them it might
mm-hmm.
be new, and we need to explain it, that
mm-hmm.
this is what is going on.
Right.
And
right.
and carry them along with us as we're
mm-hmm.
going along with these westernized procedures that
right.
we're accustomed to, and
mm-hmm.
it's our norm.
Right.
Even if we consider it not being invasive,
he
does
might.
He know what's going on
yeah.
and all these different sounds and people coming in, and he might be thinking that there's a real emergency here. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, it may probably be very scary for him.
Probably very scary.
Very normal for us. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think just reflecting that to him through the interpreters, this must be very scary for him. Mm-hmm. It's very new. Just that acknowledgement,
yeah.
I think, mm-hmm. is huge. Versus, don't worry about it. This is we're in charge here. You know, just conveying that to him.
Yeah.
I don't think is a huge intervention. Yeah. Is really reflecting your observation or your understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that can be a very important. Now we're on to number three.
Number three.
The body language that we're going to use, so we're not going to walk it. So the open body language. The eye contact also might be something culturally we need to be careful of. I believe a smile is usually important in all languages, but again, if this is a distressing situation and you're walking in like the cheerleader, in some ways you have to mirror that family's situation, and obviously the tone of voice is enormous in a situation like this. No matter what language you're speaking,
your presence is going to
the physical stance. And also the tone of your voice and the, the rapidity, how quickly you're speaking as well. So very consciously as an intervention would be decrease the tone of voice, soft, calming tone of voice, and a slower pace of, and I don't think as nurses we often think of that. Mm-hmm. I think we,
in the moment you don't,
think of, and that's a very big skill in a time when we're feeling very stressed to really act. It's a wonderful acting job that we do a lot, to act like a nurse, and then after go in the nursing station and have the meltdown or the debrief. But at the time, you really need to be quite sophisticated in controlling your own emotions and body language.
Mm-hmm.
So with the language barrier, I think that there are those international languages, those human ways of relating to one another that this family can, or the whole family, I think, can pick up on as well in a situation like this. Because we have to focus on what can we do. There's so much we can't do here. Mm-hmm. Those are simple things that we can do that I believe and I've seen in my practice can make a difference as well.
I think what we're going to have to be trying to do is show them that they're unique. And right now we're focused on them and their care. While, of course, we are also explaining to them that we need to be continuously evaluating the well-being of the mom and the baby as we're. But we need to prioritize that they're feeling unique, and everything that involves that portrayal of making them feel like they're unique, and that we're here at this moment to take care of you as an individual, but as a unit, as a family.
I think in response to what you just mentioned, Leah, that the timing of that is very important. That do we start with the explanation of what we're doing and why, or do we open space to hear first? And I think that's a very important distinction there, and it sounds like a very insignificant, tiny thing, but I think when that explanation comes is going to be very key as well in this situation. Yeah. And for sure you wouldn't start with, well, we're just going to explain to them what we're doing and why, and they have the information, now they understand and everything's fine.
Yeah,
I think we need to start with the explanation should come, again, time and with the family's
timing.
Readiness.
We need to ask what the father's concerns are and wishes, and what the mother's concerns.
Yes,
that's absolutely.
Absolutely. Which is different from what do you want. You want the pain medication or you don't want the medication.
That's right.
It's really what is your concerns. I think the other question, which is an intervention, how can we be of most help to you right now? You're this concern. You have that concern, and hopefully the interventions will. And that really does fit with strengths-based care, because the understanding of what the family needs they do. Usually, they have some idea of what they want or what would be helpful to them. And even if they don't, if we ask the question, it's again showing that we're here to serve you. We're not here for you to do what you're told and follow our delicious rules.
And collaboration.
Yes, we're here for you. And so, how can we be of most help to you right now in this situation?
Yeah.
I think sometimes we're afraid of asking that question because we think patients are going to come out with a whole list of problems
that we can't fix.
Patients are quite, they're reasonable. They know we're busy. They're not going to. But I think the ultimate base of working with Strand, I think working with Strand-based would be, from my understanding, it's a collaborative part. If you have basic human respect of like you're there for them. I think you've opened up the wall that we keep hitting.
Because it seems like there may be. I mean, we have to explore. Obviously, there are concerns and so on. But the sense that the nurses are or the nurses getting that there's some hostility towards the nurses and so on suggests that maybe there are some trust issues that need to be resolved, and it's by really trying to find out from the patients, what are their concerns, what are their needs, that we're going to be able to start building that trust. So they see that, you want to be upheld to them if you're not working against them. It's not a tug of war. It's not a conflict.
That's right. That's
you're working together.
That is very, very key.
So if I were to ask all of us here, what would be the rationale to begin at a particular point to educating the family, where or how and why would we do what we
do? I don't know if I would use that word educating the family either. I think I would use my main goal would be to learn from the family versus try to educate them, and we're going to learn together. So somehow I would try to convey that, and when my rationale, I think I bottom line is that sense of control. If I can do anything to help that family feel, and through, if they feel listened to, they may feel more in control. If they feel respected, they may feel they have some space in here, they have a role here, to play a role, that they're important. I think all of those, if we can convey some of those things, then that will ultimately help them to feel some sense of control in a very difficult situation where there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of stress. So I think, to me, that would be part of my rationale, is for them to feel that they had a say, that they had a role, that they're respected, all with toward the goal or toward the rationale of helping them feel valued and feel some kind of a sense of control.
So what factors how would we create a healthy learning environment then for the patient and the family?
Well, number one, the respect. I think that's clear.
And how do you do that?
How do you demonstrate respect? Like, what would be our behaviors?
Well, I think we talked about the behavior. Mm-hmm. We talked about just how can we help you the most.
Being kind present, of questions we would ask.
Bring really understanding what are their expectations. And then
concerns. Yeah.
What is his concern? So I think we're setting up the stage for respect and lowering the anxiety, because we need to understand where this anxiety is coming from. And if their experience of healthcare, which could be very possible of people who just comes and teach you, tells you what to do, walk in and out, do their things, and walk out, and no one understands, and it's quite, we could be quite invasive. Because everybody's busy and we don't, we've lost the art of talking to the patient, being present. So I think we could start engaging. Before that, I don't think we can do. I don't think we're nursing. We're not caring. We're not providing nursing care. Because we need to get at that belly, we need to get to that baby. But there's a couple of layers that we need to before having access. So we need it fast, and I think, so respect, presence.
I think Dr. Gottlieb this morning, I can't remember the exact quote, and I apologize, but Dr. Gottlieb presented the aspect of it's not the data that is present, but what you get out of it or what you see.
That's
I can't really remember the exact quote in itself. But I think it's important.
It's not what you look at, it's what you see.
Thank you. It's not what you look at, it's what you see. So I think it's important for us to be able to look at the situation through his eyes and ask him, what does he think is going on here?
So the same question.
Exactly.
You know, we're going back, but it's also in the sense of even asking our patient, you know, mm-hmm. what is going on here?
Right.
Was mm-hmm. she prepared? Did she know that this was, she knew she was going to have a baby, yes. I'm hoping.
And you know what, but even if you're prepared sometimes,
it's not really.
Well, you're
exactly.
never, that's it. And,
yeah.
it all different. And it is, pain is part of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. And the idea that we have in our culture to treat the pain.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mom, I'm going to ask you, do we have to? I mean, the challenge is that it's labor pain. So do we want it to maybe,
well, treat
they
with
don't
the
want
medication,
medication.
Right.
It's not our ultimate, it's
right.
not just what we have as our weapon.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to stop trying to give
push.
What we want, but say, so how, what has worked in the past, what would work for them. I think
and
the
also,
idea that we have to give an epidural to everybody in terms of patient and the safety of the baby, I think
mm-hmm.
we need to seriously read the,
And we can't assume that she was prepared. We don't know
how long they've been here.
Again, I'm saying, what does prepared mean? Because
mm-hmm.
this is a normal labor process.
And then you get in there and really, I don't
exactly.
know if there's any prenatal
yeah.
class that
yeah.
can prepare you, because every situation is
that's
different.
Right, yeah.
In answer to your question
mm-hmm.
about the learning environment, I want to pick up on something that Sandy mentioned, and it sounds very banal, but nurses do not do it. If we're talking on a regular basis, if we're talking about creating that learning environment and that climate of respect, one of the first things we should do, because we're just coming on shift, is introduce yourself to the patient and family.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when we walk in that
yeah.
room,
mm-hmm.
And when we don't know what situation we're coming in, I guess we might have had something in report,
mm-hmm.
but regardless.
Mm-hmm.
What is your role?
You
mm-hmm.
come in, hello,
yeah.
my name is,
mm-hmm.
I'm a nurse here, I'm here for you, how
mm-hmm.
are you, it's nice to meet you. Now, I know that, and it doesn't take a lot of time
no,
to do
no.
that,
no.
But
crucial.
I think we may skip that, and we try to, how, what's your concern, and
mm-hmm.
Who wants the pain medication, and I think it's some of these small things that don't take
mm-hmm.
a lot of time, that, and you have to stay on that
mm-hmm.
track,
mm-hmm.
But that is step number one.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Introduce yourself. Look at your tone of voice, look at your, not
yeah,
look, but control.
Right. Yes.
Think mm-hmm. about, be aware, be deliberate in your body language, in your tone of voice, and in how you present yourself to that family. And I believe in my
mm-hmm.
clinical practice, just that, and it sounds like a very small intervention,
it isn't.
Can make
yeah.
an enormous difference. And I'm wondering how many, because you mentioned it, how many people have come in and out of that room
yeah.
with the mask, with the gowns, with the who knows what,
mm-hmm.
and just coming in,
mm-hmm.
and you know, we have to explain, oh, I'm just doing this now, or I'm just, they might be explaining it, but they haven't even introduced themselves.
Right.
So again, you're creating this climate, I'm telling you what I'm doing, which is respectful. That's part
that's
of it, but
yes.
we have to back
but
up.
Exactly, those are the very point form, how we provide respect, that it's important to define, because I think it's our biggest point.
Sort of, yeah.
And how many people are coming in, and I think we've seen a lot of situations where they, that's right, and they don't even look at patient anymore. I mean, take the blood pressure, yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
I don't know if we're quite ready to transition, but we have a very contentious work environment here
yes.
as
yes,
well. How are we
good.
Going to deal
yeah.
with that?
I think before we'd like to get there, I think I just wanted to make the comment of setting up a healthy learning environment is crucial
mm-hmm.
for us to even think about educating or working with them
right.
in
mm-hmm.
explaining, because we
mm-hmm.
need to be able to calm their anxiety, decrease
mm-hmm.
the anxiety for all of them,
mm-hmm.
and actually we need to evaluate, are they ready to mm-hmm. listen to what
that's
we
right.
want them
that's right.
to learn from this experience,
mm-hmm.
or if it's knowledge they need,
mm-hmm.
or if it's hand-holding they need, or if it's, you know, other ways to calm down the pain,
mm-hmm.
decrease the
mm-hmm.
pain without necessarily
pharmacology.
Mm-hmm. And really, if she's ready to push, realistically, can she receive
epidural.
An epidural? It's
mm-hmm.
it's a little too late. So
mm-hmm.
we need to, even if we've got three people supposedly
mm-hmm.
in this room
mm-hmm.
that want pain medication,
mm-hmm.
we need to be able mm-hmm. to say this is not a possibility, and we might try,
mm-hmm.
you know, different weight strategies to decrase our pain.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to sort of create this healthy environment so that we can evaluate their readiness so that when we start engaging in whatever transmission of information or exchange of information, whatever their needs might be, that they're actually ready to receive it.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then that brings us to our next point.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So go ahead, Dr. Benner, if you wanted to.
The
team.
The team seems to be upset because they worry that the room is too small to accommodate three family members.
Mm-hmm.
But they also, they don't want any visitors ever in the delivery room. That's a little strange these days, because usually fathers are allowed.
Mm-hmm. That's just quite the opposite. If the dad's not there, there's a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But the staff is worried about you're creating an unfortunate precedent. They inform, but I wonder if that comes as a kind of threat that they will share their concerns with the head nurse. So how are you going to deal with that? That's a hot spot in the middle of a hot spot, right?
That's right.
And of course, I keep going back, but I just heard you say something about there's a problem if the dad is not in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made me think that's our North American assumption, that the dad is part of the room.
And they used to be hard, right?
Yes.
They used to be not a lot. And the mothers never used to be able to room in and hold the babies. And now the mother that doesn't room in and has the baby in the nursery is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So we have these, the research shows something, and then everybody, like breastfeeding now. If you're bottle feeding, you've got a problem, whereas in the 50s, if you were breastfeeding, you had a problem. Yep. So we change on a dime.
We change. But that being said, I want to make this point is, have we even taken the time, have we forced him in this room? And then told him, expected him
here
to
you
be
go.
There.
Here's your gown, stand
and,
there.
And here you go, and he doesn't know what to do, what to
That's
say. He's never
question.
Seen his wife in pain. And here we are thinking he's the problem. Well, maybe we're the problem we've set them up for this.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just made me realize the importance to really ask about how is childbirth in your country? And are the men usually present?
Yeah. Which sort of surprised me actually when I read the scenario that maybe he was.
I just wanted to say that. So if we go back to the team, I apologize.
That's okay.
We need to deal with that team.
Yeah, the
team.
So while we have this, the situation going on outside, we still have a situation going on inside.
Yeah.
While, don't forget, we still have two other patients, right?
Yes.
So what do we do?
Well, I think I would really have to say, without translation, you can't provide safe care, and you need the translation.
That's right.
And you can try to separate and have only one of the cousins, but I don't think that's a good strategy. I think they want the support of one another. And of course it doesn't need to set up a precedent.
But that's what the nurses believe, though. That's
yeah.
what you're being told. So I think to say, no, it's not set I think we need to understand this is not the usual way they operate.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard this before. Oh, if we do it for one patient, we're going to have to. Which actually is not true.
Not true.
It is really not true that if we do it for one, everybody's going to want it. It's just this one wants it. And some don't want any, So that's, again, but it's their perception that I think we have to work with.
But it's also from this perception that we're reading and that we've dealt with. It's a prescriptive way of somebody comes in, they're in labor, they go in the room alone, and we don't look at the uniqueness of each family, and we don't want family in the room, and that's just how we do it here.
And that's not a safe standard of care, because without translators, you can't provide safe care.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So I think you have to have moral courage in this situation, and you have to do this as tactfully as possible, but you have to say it's not really tenable not to have translators.
That's
and
right.
you don't believe it sets precedent, mm-hmm. and but it would be tantamount to creating a danger mm-hmm. in this situation.
So that the casting it in the frame of patient safety might be an easier way for the mm-hmm. nurses mm-hmm. to understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. But I think beyond that, it seems to me that there probably needs to be a debrief mm-hmm. after this happens.
Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely.
You know, it could even be the next day or whatever.
No, but sure, because we have to think situation. That our main goal here is for the unless they're going to come and forcefully take those families, we need to be, the team is a huge challenge, but again, what you're saying is not a priority right now.
Yeah, and I think I would say, I think that's a really good idea to discuss this with the head nurse.
Yes.
But we won't be able to do that till mm-hmm. tomorrow.
That's
and
right.
Let's plan on doing it tomorrow.
That's right.
And, yeah. Again, the role of advocacy and the debrief, which we do not do nearly as enough, mm-hmm. nearly mm-hmm. as much as we should do. Mm-hmm. We barely do any mm-hmm. debrief. We can mm-hmm. have a cold blue, and so I can imagine this. Usually, it's normal mm-hmm. Conflict that happened, and you know, we carry on. And then again. If we look at it from a team perspective, no matter what, you're trying to discuss after that. If you haven't debriefed again and understand where every member of the team are coming from and dealing with that aspect, just the same way we deal with the family, it's going to pile up as well. Mm-hmm. And the mm-hmm. strength and the the pressure is going to start to be on the team as well over time.
Yeah.
We've seen that. We've lived this.
Well, I think the same questions in a debrief, the same questions that we are asking now mm-hmm. about the family situation could be asked on
absolutely.
The team.
Absolutely. Right. I was going to say that as well.
What were they feeling when this was
that's
going
right.
on, and what did they think was going on, mm-hmm. and so on.
And the same ones we were going to ask the family as well, mm-hmm. what is your biggest concern? Now, their concern was around the precedent, but I just read here, because they're accosting us as we come up.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have to respond somehow.
Yes.
We can't
go,
well, we're going to debrief tomorrow with the head nurse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have to give some kind of a response.
Mm-hmm.
But when they say that they believe that there should be no visitors allowed, I'm just picking up on
mm-hmm.
what you said, that these are not visitors.
Mm-hmm.
You have to reframe it.
Right.
Oh, yeah, you know. These
are
not visitors, these are translators,
mm-hmm. Right.
you know, and they're working together, and both of them need to be there, and the other one's the father, so I'm assuming he's not considered a
mm-hmm.
visitor
right.
either.
Right.
So I think just clarifying that and sharing that information might be helpful,
mm-hmm.
So we're not
mm-hmm.
discounting what
yes,
they're saying,
exactly.
and
mm-hmm.
actually that's a good in, because if they were visitors, you'd have a
yes.
wouldn't be able to,
yeah.
to
yeah.
use that, but
mm-hmm.
I think that
that's
the
right.
reality is
yes.
that we don't see them
mm-hmm.
as visitors. They're part of we need
mm-hmm.
them again for the translation
mm-hmm.
for patient
yeah.
safety and quality of the experience
that's
as well.
Right. I think we have no choice. Honestly, if you wanted this to make it a positive positive, first of all, birth environment, never mind learning, positive, the most positive experience, and you do want to get tackled to the baby, the fetus, and to be there for the mother. You need to be able to rely to the family, and more concretely, pass the respect. I would start noting that one of the strengths is that there's so many people that are concerned,
mm-hmm.
and so I would probably reflect that to
mm-hmm.
To the family
mm-hmm.
in a positive way. You know,
mm-hmm.
I would start commending a little bit the family. I think commending is great, and when it's really done, and
mm-hmm.
it has to be.
It's wonderful that you're here for her,
and it
right.
can't be fake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But one thing that I see is people who are very concerned.
Right.
The anxiety,
mm-hmm.
and even at the level of aggressivity, a certain amount of aggressiveness, it's come from anxiety, from
and
fear,
concern.
And so I think these people are concerned. They're around, so I would start use them.
Yeah.
Utilizing them for me, go getter, ice. Let's
mm-hmm.
let's bring it. I'm not, you know, and so you could give them some kind of responsibility
mm-hmm.
To assist her pain, give them some
mm-hmm.
control, and then I could step out to go see my two other patients.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I would see the strength base, just
in the family.
In the family.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think at that point. You wanted to get on to the education, it's just going to be embedded into whatever nursing.
I think it's important to take that that same strengths-based approach with the family, and to, now the role is different. I'm not, promoting the health of my nurse. I'm not their nurse. I'm their colleague. So my role is different. But I think the approach to strengths-based, to leadership, using a collaborative strengths-based approach to working with our colleagues is very important. And I believe that I'm reflecting somehow the nurse's strengths. So I see how concerned you are. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. Because they are dialoguing, okay? They could be doing this in the, oh, look at that nurse, she has all the... They're accosting us. Thank you for letting me know. Thank you for coming forward with your concerns. And what is underlying that actually is probably the same thing that I'm feeling in this situation and the family, which is lack of control. So they're probably feeling you're setting an unprecedented
set of precedent.
So right. The next time I might have to deal with that.
That's right. And that is going to disrupt my care. I'm going to be out of control, and I'm not going to be able to nurse these families. So again, it's fear, anxiety related to when there's something new coming and we're not familiar with it, we get anxious and we don't feel in control. So I think in that debrief session to talk about also that kind of, this is new and this is different, and what if every patient had six family members in, and can we try it and see, and does that in fact happen, or again, it's a genuine fear that they have. So I think to address that versus trying to
And these are opportunities for everybody to learn.
That's
from
right, absolutely. We're all
how it was handled and what were the issues and so on.
The other thing that's very interesting, if we could make some parallels, if it were a medical problem, this patient needs insulin. This patient needs continuous monitoring. This patient needs whatever to mobilize. Or a special diet. Now, is everybody going to need that special diet? Is everybody going to need the one-to-one care? So I think to make some links with that, that it's not so different from everybody does get tailored care, medically speaking. You're not going to give everybody the same dose of antibiotic or medication. Or
at the same time.
Exactly. So that might help also to put some perspective on that fear that if you do it for one, you're going to have to do it for everyone.
And in line with what you're saying, if it were a medical patient who needed a translator in order for the patient to understand what was going on, there would be very little question about having a translator present.
But I think when, the translator, we talked about the benefits and the safety, the care component, right? The safety of it all. We also need to sort of reinforce the fact that the family is there to provide care and being safe, but it also promotes healing and support, and it's well documented. It's been documented.
So the families are helping us.
They're actually helping us.
They're helping us provide care versus interfering with the care or adding to the care.
Yes.
Again, that's an assumption.
It is.
But because there's people, it's going to prevent care. That's our assumption, again.
Now, there's things to be said. Now, if the reality is that the room is really much too small for a woman in active labor, a nurse, and three other people, then that, of course, becomes another safety concern that we need to evaluate. But we need to also make it very clear that one translator at a time is a must. Like, there are certain basic needs that we need, and this would be one of them.
And I think, though, understanding from the families, because maybe they don't really need those two. I think that gets on your thing. These two cousins need to be there because because that's who they are and they always do things together? Or is this something that is not a big issue for them and they can come in one at a time? So I think we need to make that assessment before we ask one of them to leave.
Otherwise,
we've just, added to the conflict and the distress that it is already.
But then we go back to assess what are we under, it's their situation, and I think this is a one thing to unload off our shoulder. It's like, what does it mean for them? What do they want? So it's not about us. in a sense that mm-hmm. it's about their experience. So I think Arosa set the stage for their experience.
When we look back at the team and the debriefing mm-hmm. afterwards,
right.
You know, when it becomes difficult for our colleagues to understand the need to feel less anxiety, and often it's important to let them know that when our patients feel anxious, a lot of the time it has to do with fear and the mm-hmm. unknown, mm-hmm. not knowing what will come next. Mm-hmm. And I think for us, as well as nurses working on this particular unit or any other unit, it's a lot easier for us to set little rules for everybody mm-hmm. because it's a lot easier for us to control mm-hmm. and not have to deal
right.
with the unknown.
That's right.
So that in itself, you know, we should make that comparison of mm-hmm. as hard as it is for us to understand, mm-hmm. you know, patients do need deal with mm-hmm. anxiety of the unknown. But look at us.
Yeah,
we're doing exactly the same,
thing.
Right. And maybe mm-hmm. we it's okay not to know everything, mm-hmm. and that's why we're here as a team, and we need to support
that's
one
right.
another.
That's
yep.
right. Yeah, that's right.
But so bringing it back to that level.
Right. Mm-hmm. But also the value of experience and learning,
mm-hmm.
because one of us has had to go through this experience, and now we can talk about it
yes.
and all
mm-hmm.
learn from it.
That's right.
You know, so it's an opportunity, too, for the team. I mean, when you talk about anxiety and control and so on, if you have a better idea of what to do if it should happen to you, you're not going to be as anxious
right.
or
mm-hmm.
feeling out
that's
of control, right?
Mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. I think the other point that's very important that you're making is related to a sense of cohesiveness in the team, and if we're all learning together,
mm-hmm.
that brings people together, so
yeah.
it doesn't divide, because there's mm-hmm. a little division right now. You're
right.
the good guy, you're trying to do
mm-hmm.
all this,
right.
and this is against the rules. So whatever we can do to have a common goal, which I think we have to find in our colleagues. These are not bad nurses. These are good
mm-hmm.
nurses. These are nurses who want pay. They're concerned that the room
mm-hmm.
is too small. They're concerned that
that's
they're going to get overwhelmed mm-hmm. and they're not going to give good care. We must see it from that perspective.
Right.
It's too easy to, like,
mm-hmm.
we do the same thing with the family,
yeah.
blame them. They've
mm-hmm.
got a problem. And so look for those strengths in the nurses, and that's what brings us together.
Mm-hmm.
We're all
right.
in this together.
Mm-hmm.
We're
right.
all in this together, and we can all learn from mm-hmm. it, and we're going to move forward together.
Mm-hmm.
As well, and where do we want to go with this? And so, really collaborating with the team as well,
right.
And the cohesion in the team is
mm-hmm.
key. Because if you're
absolutely.
Not part of the team, you're not going to be able to influence change.
To do everything you can, not to create adversarialism
mm-hmm.
and loss of trust.
That's
yes.
right.
Within the team.
Within your team, yes, absolutely.
That will definitely work against you and against
yeah.
all of your other families.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
and the goal that you have in mind to improve and develop care, you will
mm-hmm.
never reach it.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be part of the team
mm-hmm.
In order to move toward change together
yeah.
versus an outsider coming in
mm-hmm.
saying, well, you know, we're doing it this way because this
mm-hmm.
is the right way to do it. You're going to be alienated, you're going to be marginalized, and
mm-hmm.
and at least, like I said, at least they're bringing this right, there's enough of a trust there in the colleagues
mm-hmm.
where they're bringing it right to your face, and they're
that's
not
right.
talking
sure.
about it in the back room,
right.
So it's giving you an opportunity
yes.
to work with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'd actually thank them for letting me know
mm-hmm.
how they were feeling and what their
yes.
concerns were.
Yes. You know, I think Marcia's comment about taking this experience and taking it as a learning
mm-hmm.
opportunity
mm-hmm.
for all of us, I think it also allows the team to maybe step back and think about what are our values on this unit
mm-hmm.
and how do we work together and what is our focus of care?
Mm-hmm.
And we know it's the woman who comes in labor,
mm-hmm.
but really that's just the woman in labor in the labor and delivery room.
Right.
But what is our underlying values when
mm-hmm.
we work with them and we care for them?
And how family-centered do we want to be?
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Or do we just say
that's
we're family-centered
right.
because it looks
mm-hmm.
good on a mission
that's
statement?
Right. Right.
Which we see that a lot.
We're not walking
right.
our talk
exactly.
or
right.
we're just
yeah.
talking
right.
the
right.
talk and
right.
using all the good words that
yes.
are in for 2013.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But then
yeah.
when we really look at our practice,
yeah.
is it really happening?
One very interesting example I have, which actually was an eye-opener for me, why nurses didn't, and this was with an older gentleman, and the family, the wife was the caregiver. He had Alzheimer's and he was hospitalized. She was coming in and doing the care every day. Well, the nurses were very upset because they felt that there's no role because she's bathing him and they're taking over my job, and now, and I'm not a good nurse because I should be doing this and the wife is doing it and now I have no role. And once I understood that, I understood why they didn't want, and they were saying, go home and rest, to her, go home and rest, you shouldn't be doing this, we can do it. But of course, she needed to do it. That was her role. And they just felt in competition. Because we're talking about caregiving here. Nurses do it and family members do it. And so when the family member's doing it, then I've got, now the other thing is the dumping thing where, oh, with the family's doing it, so I don't have to do it. So we have to understand. We have to understand where this team is coming from in respect to family care. What does it mean to them? And that takes some time also to address the attitudes, address the philosophies, and then look at how you still have a role in supporting that wife in giving that care. Is work. It's not like you have nothing to do now, and you're not a bad nurse because someone's taken over your job. So we had to do a lot of work with that. So I wonder where this team is coming from in terms of their attitudes toward family, because it's coming from somewhere, and again, it's probably coming from a good place, because we look at the other, there's a bad nurse. No, she's actually a good nurse, because she's concerned, she wants to do a good job.
Yes. I think, too, that what we don't know is, in this community, is this family the first family that they've had to deal with like this, or have they had to deal with several families and not known what to do with it?
Yes, right. You know? And coaching
but,
and support.
But nonetheless, increasingly, we're seeing more multicultural families coming in, and so we do have to find some ways of dealing with them.
That's right. And especially if this is their first baby, and chances are they'll have a second baby, and how will this experience turn out for them? And again, if they were to come back for their second, well, what would it all mean when they walk in through those doors? It's like, oh, the same nurses.
And that's why I was thinking we could do them such an injustice to for this to be a negative or toxic or, and it already is distressing. Actually, it's already distressing. And we don't want to add to their distress. And anything we can do to make it positive would be huge. I mean, even some of these small things in daily practice, but this is such a key life event that will mark them forever. And it can be very traumatizing.
Absolutely.
We can make it or break it.
And then we go back to, and we justify it, it's small things. I think strength-based nursing, intervention based on strength, are actually very small. They're not costing a lot of money.
They don't cost a lot
of money. They're
That's
very
right.
small. They pay a lot. And I think you mentioned that.
It can be very high impact.
Very high impact.
High impact and it's
very,
so implanting.
Yes.
And at some point, you know, we have to, and then sometimes you might not reach everybody, you know, time-wise.
That's right.
And I think you have to, we do have to, again, it's not everything's going to be perfect. But
and we have to let go as well sometimes.
Let go a lot.
One thing I think is a challenge yes, these are small things, but they're really big things. But I think one of the biggest challenges is that by and large, they're invisible. So the smile, the you're not going to chart that. No, smiled at the patient, introduced myself by name and said, hello, how are you? These are extremely, we're not charting those interventions, and these are very, very important interventions. So I would say that 90% of real nursing is going on is the invisible. So we've got to label them. We have to label them, and we have to talk about them, and we have to have care plans that reflect them. But again, that's a big challenge because of the complexity of the human relational aspects of care. You can't just chart it all.
I mean,
you'll be there forever, right?
Yeah.
So the charting is this checklist of things, but I don't think I've ever seen introduce yourself to the patient or family on the chart and on those standardized care plans, and it should be there. It should be there. So making the invisible visible, and I think that's our role as leaders as well within the team, is to help. I think that will help to value, because when you put a label on it, and it becomes concrete, it becomes a little bit more value than if it's invisible. No one will notice if you don't introduce yourself. No one will notice it, and no one ever talks about it. So bring it forward, celebrate it, and actually label it. I think those are important with this team as well.
Should we stop and ask if there are questions?
I'm not. I'm assuming our participants in the webinar are submitting questions.
No questions.
Okay. Any comments, maybe?
Ideas? Other ideas?
Can they hear us? Are they?
If you have any comments, maybe you might not have any questions, but maybe any comments on our exchange.
Yeah, or ideas as well in terms of these questions, because obviously this is a very large area, and so we'd love to have some ideas from anyone in the audience around any of these questions.
I think we have to wrap it up at 3:15, isn't it?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
But if...
they want to write in questions.
If you'd like to write in questions or comments, but I think that'll bring us to the end of our... We're wrapping, okay. So thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And...
Sure.
We'll wait for questions until the end, 3:15. Okay, great. So we'll just wait until some questions or comments come in. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.